I'm going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to talk about conflict resolution. I have four steps to a better marriage. But first of all, I just want to let you know, I am not a gifted speaker. This is not my forte. But what I lack in that, I have a lot of confidence that the Lord's given me in the things that he's put in my life. And that's what I have a lot of confidence in. And that's why I come up here, is because I want to share those things, what the Lord's done with me, hopefully with you, so that way you can apply them to your life. So before I start, everything starts with two selfish people, right? With different backgrounds and personalities. Now add some habits and throw in a bunch of expectations, and then turn up the heat a little bit with daily trials of life. Guess what? You're bound to have conflict, right? It's unavoidable. Since every marriage has its tensions, it isn't a question of avoiding them, but how do you deal with them? Conflict can lead to a process that develops oneness and isolation. And this is one of the things we need to focus on, because this is what it's about, right? Conflict. And it's going to happen. We wish that it wouldn't, but when you're dealing with somebody, you do have those expectations, those types of things that are going to come up. And when they do, your feelings are going to be hurt, and then the conflict starts. So I do have four steps. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Monty Python movie where they talk about spam. It's like a half hour skit or something like that, and they say spam over 400 times, right? So I'm not going to go that far, but I am going to repeat this four steps a few times, because I'm hoping it sticks. They're simple words, but they have a lot of biblical principle behind them, and if you, hopefully you will remember them when the conflict comes up. And let's face it, you know, we're all getting older. There's some of us here are older. I mean, I'm almost 50 now. It's hard to believe. I know. You always think of yourself like a kid, you know? And it's just not that way anymore. But, you know, it's never too late to change. I know Karen was talking about, you know, she thought everything was good in her marriage. And then when her husband sat her down and said, hey, we got to talk, it was like a bombshell. She didn't see it coming. You know, Jen and I had a similar experience, you know, 22 years of marriage. I dated but we liked and dated each other for 8 years before marriage. Then we've now been married over 26 years, but 22 years came along and I sat Jen down and said, hey, we need to talk. You know, it was try not to get emotional, but it was a bombshell, you know. But thankfully, the Lord got a hold of me and straightened things out. And this is just part of this thing, because I didn't do really well at conflict resolution. I didn't know how to communicate and stuff like that. So that's where I like to talk a little bit about some examples of a communication. But make sure my next slide comes up. What is good communication? Good communication is when a person is able to listen to others as well as successfully relay their own ideas and opinions. So if you look at the picture there, it has the cat and the mouse, right? They're looking eye to eye. And it says in the little saying, I don't know if you can read it, it says, you may be seeing eye to eye, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're both coming from the same place, right? When you see that picture, one of them's thinking, that's lunch. And the other one's thinking, I got to get out of here because I don't want to be lunch, right? So they're looking eye to eye, right? And sometimes that's how we are with our spouses, right? We're looking eye to eye. And one's on the attack because they're hurt or offended, or they're trying to communicate something and sometimes it doesn't come out well. And the other one is saying, I need to get out of here because I'm being attacked. I don't want to be lunch, right? I don't want my face ripped off or whatever it is. So a good example of that is assuming that your spouse comes to you with some kind of disagreement or something that's bothering them. And we just don't realize the severity of it, right? Because that's what's happening. They're coming to us, and we think that they're saying something, and we don't understand the severity of it, so we don't take it as serious. We just don't know what they're really trying to say. Sometimes we're not conveying our thoughts all the way, or sometimes we think we communicated clearly what we expected. There's a lot of times I do this. This is a bad habit of mine. I start talking, and I automatically assume that everybody can read the rest of my mind and understand where I'm going, right? How many times have we done that?
Sure.
But we didn't get all of our thoughts out there, and then we leave that gap. And when that gap happens, when we leave that gap there, what happens? Something doesn't get met. And then when it doesn't get met, what do? We get frustrated or hurt or something like that. So, what are some common barriers to effective communication? Some of them are emotional barriers. Now, this is one of the ones that was a big one for me, because I grew up in a home where my father was an alcoholic. And being an alcoholic, you know, he didn't physically abuse me, but he emotionally abused me. There was a lot of neglect, a lot of isolation, because what happened is when he got drunk, my mom would leave. I do have it on the right one, right? So he would leave, or she would leave and take off because she didn't want to be around him. And sometimes, you know, I didn't go and I'm there, but you become isolated because your dad's doing your thing, your mom's doing your thing, and now you're isolated. So growing up, I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't know how to talk. And what happened is that caused me to build up walls and barriers, because as well as being an alcoholic, then it had some abuse, so you'd have the walls and defenses up. So those are some of the emotional barriers that could be there. Some others can be differences in perception and viewpoint, right? Because we all come from different walks of life and backgrounds, geological areas, demographics, right? So because of that, we just see things differently. Sometimes it could be in a lack of attention, interest, maybe we're distracted like Mike was saying, or irrelevance to the receiver, because you come from a different walk of life. What's important to you may not be important to me. Just like it's important to Mike about the Browns, but it's not important to Karen, you know? So they're going to have differences there. So because of that... So you need to think about what's in your way, right? I like the pictures because it kind of says a lot. When you see a picture, it says a lot of things. So I really like them, so I hope you're good with them. Let's see here. Let's go on to the next one. Wait. All right, so let's go with this first step, which is don't defend, all right? Don't explain, don't give an excuse. If you are too busy defending, explaining, or giving an excuse, you won't be able to hear what they are trying to say. And when you look at the picture, you know, the guy thought coming in that Sherman tank that he had a pretty solid, good defense, right? But what, as you can see, the picture, there's like a gazillion bombs coming at him. And that's exactly what happens. When you try to defend yourself, that's exactly what's happening. Now, the other person's thinking you're not taking the time to listen to me or you don't hear me. And now I got to get my point across because you're not listening. Now I got to get more, right? Yep. So now we get louder sometimes. Or we can, you know, it can go all different directions, but we're trying to get our point across. I'm hurt. You don't understand me. You're not listening to me. So that is key. You know, you don't want to defend. So all of our differences are magnified in marriage because they feed what is undoubtedly the biggest source of our conflict, which is our selfishness and sinful nature. And what happens is when we're defending, that's what we're doing, you know. It's our selfishness. It's about me. I'm not listening to you because I'm protecting myself. So we need to realize that, because maintaining harmony in marriage has been difficult since Adam and Eve. Two people beginning their marriage together and trying to go their own selfish, separate ways can never hope to experience the oneness of marriage as God intended. The prophet Isaiah said, about 2,500 years ago, he described selfishness like this. This is in Isaiah 53:6. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us have turned to his own way, right? And that's that selfishness. Because when somebody's trying to express themselves, they're that one that has been hurt, you know? And right now, they're in that situation where they're hurt and they're trying to explain it. So the person who's not has to be the one that steps in there and say, hey, I'm not going to defend, and I'm going to not be selfish because I can see you're hurt and I need to help you. So why do we defend ourselves? The first one that normally is, I think, is a big one is pride. When pride rises up, you know, that causes us to want to defend ourselves instead of not. So sometimes pride can rise up and cause that. Then there could be fear. Sometimes you're fearful as a spouse that somebody's not listening to you, or they're not hearing you, or they're going to think a certain way about you, right? And then the last one is a football reference here. The best offense is what, Mike?
Defense.
Good defense, right? So when your spouse comes to you and they say, hey, this is bothering me, what do we want to do? Oh, not me, you know, and you start defending it. And really, you're kind of on the offense. You're trying to say, that's not me, this is you, you know. So we need to look at those type of things and try to think about those. So when you're coming into the situation, that you can start to put these in. Let's see here. So the scripture I like to read is 1 John 3:16 through 20. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. This is how we know that we belong to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in his presence. If our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts and he knows everything. So Jesus Christ gave us the best example of not defending ourselves. You know, he could have easily, when he was walking this earth, defended himself, right? Every time the Pharisees and everybody came to attack him, he could have easily defended himself. But he did not, to the point that he went to the cross. So he gave us the best example of not defending ourselves. And that's what we need to apply in our lives as well, that we have that same, because he's given us that example. He's saying for your brothers and sisters, how much more should you do it for your spouse, right? Because you're supposed to be one with them. Wouldn't you do it for yourself? So we need to realize that he's given us that example for our step one. Don't defend yourself. You know? And the reason is because we don't want it to condemn us. And even if you do, as soon as you notice that you're defending yourself, stop. Because God is greater than that. He's saying right there, he knows everything. He can overcome it. So stop right there. If you catch yourself doing it, don't wait till next time. Say, hey, you know what? You're right. I caught myself doing that. You know, I don't want to defend myself. I understand what you're saying. All right? So resolving conflict requires returning a blessing for an insult, right? 1 Peter 3, verses 8 through 9 says, To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil, insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. So when you're defending, you can get into that where you're doing that, okay? You're starting now to return an insult for an insult, and all you're going to do is just continue to escalate it. So when you're thinking about this, think about that scripture where it says in Peter, you know, be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted. And then step two, now we've learned about let's not defend ourselves. The second step is validate your spouse's feelings. Whether you like it or not, this is how they feel. They aren't trying to make your life difficult, okay? You need to validate people's emotions, whether you understand them and where they came from, or whether you agree with the intensity and their reaction. Simply accept that they feel a certain way. Help them to feel better. Be there for them. You know, it's very important. This is now that you're stopping and you're listening to them, this is one of the things that I found out that's really worked for us and for others in their marriage as well, is when you can repeat back what's going on. I understand that you're hurt. I see that you're not getting enough quality time, okay? So that way they can understand that you understand where they're coming from. Because when you're not defending, you're listening now. Now you should take that listening and say, repeat it back to them. Because when they hear you say it back, that actually brings peace and comfort to your spouse. Because they now understand, at least I know, they're on the same page as me, right? Now that they're on the same page, now something might happen. And that's where it brings a little bit of comfort, because now if they think that you understand, we might be getting somewhere, right? So, why don't we validate each other's feelings? Sometimes we just can't let it go, right? Someone misunderstood us and our intention, and we can't let that happen. Sometimes we're on a mission, a burning desire to vindicate ourselves and how we acted. Or I think somebody referenced to be a fixer, right? We need to fix them. I think it was Mike. Because they are broken, right? They can't be thinking that way. I got to tell you, this is the right way to think. You got it all wrong. And that never goes over well, let me tell you, does it? You know, they just want to hear, they want to know that you hear them, not to fix them, and work on a resolution. So I want to read Philippians 2, 3 through 4. Instead of being motivated by selfish ambition or vanity, each of you should, in humility, be moved to treat one another as more important than yourself. Each of you should be concerned not only about your own interests, but about the interests of others as well. So this scripture goes along with validating. It's not about your interests. It's about them, your spouse. They're coming to you. They brought this issue or this problem or this concern to you. And it's not about yourself. It's just about them. Let's try to be motivated to help them. Hope that all makes sense to everybody.
Absolutely.
The next thing here, the next one is step 3. We talked about not defending. We talked about validating. Now I'd like to talk about putting a plan into place. I think, Karen, you talked about the plan as well. You had a plan about going off and sitting in different areas. This is what we're going to do. A lot of people don't do this step. Even if they can get past the first two, like I'm telling you, these steps are not easy. They sound easy, but they are not easy, especially when you're in this thing. It's hard to detach yourself from it and not defend yourself, first of all. And if you get past that, and now you're inside, you're like, I don't want to defend myself. Now you have to think about, I got to listen to them, right? And the things they're saying is already things that you don't want to hear, right? So now you got to sit there and listen to it. And now you got to sit there and you got to put something into place. I wish they were easier, but I'm telling you, you follow these things and these principles that have biblical principles to them, conflict will almost not exist. You know, if it comes up, it will be handled quickly.
Yeah, that's right.
But when you don't do these things, I'm telling you, it just escalates and it escalates. And what happens is the relationship becomes numb.
Yeah.
And when that relationship becomes numb, what happens? You look for stimulation. And where does that come from? Right. So it doesn't happen overnight. And it's why it'd be nice if you had more, you know, youth. And I know I was there. When I was younger, no one could tell me anything, right? I knew it all. And on top of that, I'm young. I'm busy. I'm running everywhere. I'm never stopping to take the time. But this is where we need this, so we start setting this foundation. But remember, it's never too late. Some of you right now, just because you're later in life does not mean that your marriage can not fall apart.
That's right. Very good.
I mean, there's people who get divorced later in life.
That's
right. So, I mean, this is really, it is important. It is a burning desire if you haven't noticed yet. I wish I was perfect at it. I'm not. It's hard for any of us to be perfect at it. But at least God's given me the tools.
Yes.
So now all I have to do is apply them, right?
Very good, yeah.
So I'm just trying to share with you the tools that God's given me in a way I think is easy to remember. So hopefully when you walk away, you're taking that with you.
Sure.
So let's see here. Pursuing the other person. Romans 12, verses 18 says, if it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Right? The longer I live, the more I realize how difficult those words are for many couples. Living peaceably means pursuing peace. It means taking the initiative to resolve a conflict rather than waiting for the other person to take the first step. Whoever's the one who wasn't coming, that's the person I think should be the one to say, hey, wait, I didn't have an offense to begin with. Now I need to take the initiative to try to resolve it. And this is part of that planning. You know, I'm going to plan because I don't want this to happen again to my spouse. I don't want him to feel like this again. So put a plan into place. If you don't put a plan into place to resolve the issue at hand, the cycle of conflict will continue and intensify with each occurrence. Because what happens? Your spouse doesn't think that you really care, that you're really concerned about how they feel. So I have on there, be prepared, you know, prepared. Plan now, don't wait for the emergency. Because what happens when you wait for the emergency? It's too late, or it can be a lot harder of a problem to get out of. So when I talk about plans, for example, if your spouse came to you and they said, hey, we're not getting good quality time together, you know, I'm really missing you, you're working a lot, you know, you're busy doing this or that, or, you know, the first thing that I would do is like, what do you mean? We spend every night together. But that's not what she's saying, so I need to stop. Listen to what she has to say. Am I on the right one? No. So we need to stop, listen to what they have to say, and we need to put a plan into place. So, because she's obviously not getting, or he is not getting good quality time, so what do I do? Well, you know what? Maybe it's as drastic as, you know what? Tonight, we're not going to do anything other than spend time together tonight. Maybe it needs to be that kind of action. And when we go out, we're going to go out and we're going to go away from everybody. We're going to leave our phones at home. We're going to go out and just get a pizza. And we're going to go to the park and we're just going to talk. And we're going to connect. And we're not going to come home until we do. Maybe it needs to be that extreme. Or maybe it's just like, hey, you know what? You're right. This weekend, let's get a you know, sitter for the kids, or let's plan to go out. Let's make some time for each other. Whatever it may be, we need to make sure we put that plan into place, because what happens when you don't put a plan into place? Right, it's going to continue, right? So when we start putting a plan into place, now the first two things that you've done aren't, you know, they're worth something, because now they see, okay, now you're not defending yourself, so I know you're listening to me. You repeat it to me, so I know you're understanding me, you're validating me. So now you're putting a plan into place. So now I'm feeling a lot more comforted about the situation. And you will see when a situation is escalated, when you start doing those first three steps, you can see your spouse. I've seen it in our relationship between each other, where it starts to de-escalate really quick. And when it starts to de-escalate, that's when the money happens. That's when things are going to get going in the right direction. So that's why you need to do that. All right. So why do we plan? We just want to get past, why don't we plan? Sorry. We just want to get past the issue at hand, right? I'm overloaded. I have a lot going on. I really don't want to deal with this. We just really want to be done with it. Sometimes we think that the problem has been resolved, right? Because you might have done the first two steps after a little bit, and you think it's resolved. So we think, they understand me now, right? I don't need to do anything. They understand me. They get where I'm coming from. Or some of us may have this. I'm just awesome. It'll never happen again because I got it. Hey, you know, it's real. There are people that are out there, you know, and we, at times, even some of us can be like that, you know. So, Proverbs 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. And then Proverbs 24:3-4, it says, by wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. So these are some scriptures where it's talking about doing things to plan and the reasons why you do. So that way you, in your marriage, you have that house that's built on understanding and established by knowledge. So that way it can be filled with good things. So when you learn, when you're not defending yourself and you're listening and you're now validating, that you can now take that wisdom that you've learned and start putting a plan into place so that you can build that house in your marriage that can be really good. Because when we all get married, who got married saying, I'm going to get married today and I'm thinking in about 22 years I'm going to get divorced and start all over again, right? We don't do that. When we get married, we love that person. When we thought, this is it, and I'm going to be with this person and it's going to be great. It's going to be the best marriage since sliced bread. But then, like I said earlier, things come up, right? Life happens. And before you know it, you're in that boat. All right. Let me go into the next one. Whoops. Where am I at? Sorry about that. So, step four. Now you've done the other three steps, which is don't defend, validate, you put a plan into place. The last thing, which I think is crucial, is execute the plan. There's a lot of times we make plans, and we don't follow through with them, right? Now everything you've done before that, guess what? Doesn't mean anything. And the next time, what is your spouse going to think? Right. Now, do you think it's going to be harder to overcome the next time?
Yes.
Why is that? Because now they don't believe you. You have a past and a history. Even if it's one time, that's where it starts. But it will continue. So you need to put your plan into action. That's where the magic happens, right? Is in the execution. Don't wait till the next time. Be proactive. Put your plan into place. For whatever reason, it's not moving forward. So why don't we execute those plans sometimes? We don't execute the plan because we focus on the task, not the outcome. And what this outcome will give you, right? Because I got a lot going on. I don't want to focus on the task. You know, it's too much. It's overwhelming. I don't have time for it. Whatever the excuses may be. But if we looked at the outcome and we focused on that, the outcome is, I'm giving my spouse what they need. I'm making my marriage better. I'm growing us closer to the Lord. That's the outcome, and that's what we need to be focused on instead of focusing on the task. Sometimes it can be just we're tired, right? Lazy, maybe even selfish. This saying I like really well, so I hope everybody gets it what I get. So I'm going to try to communicate it as best as I can. It says, at the crossroads, the effective execution of a plan is what counts, and not merely the planning on paper. It is not what we put on our plate or even what we eat that provides nourishment and growth, but what we digest. You know, and there's a lot right there when you think about it. We can not defend and we can validate and we can plan, but if we don't follow through with it, none of it matters. It's like putting food on the plate. It could be a steak. You put it in your mouth, you chew it around, and then you spit it out. What good does it do you? Nothing. It's only when you digest it is when it happens. And this is not only for your marriage and for this conflict resolution. This is anything spiritually in your life. You know, you can do all these things, but if you don't put them into practice and execute them, it doesn't mean anything. You can go to church, you can read your Bible, but you got to apply it. You got to put it into action. That's where it matters. So in this conflict resolution, when you start doing all these steps to help yourself, if you don't execute it, I like to say vigorously, you know, with a passion, not like, I got to do it. No, like, man, I need to do this. It's important. This could be the moment that makes or breaks everything. There's a point, there's a tipping point, right, on everything. And it tips one way or the other. You don't know when that comes. Sometimes we might be able to see it coming, but a lot of times we don't. And if we're on that thing and it's one way or the other, this could be the last time that your spouse says, you know what? I'm done. I've heard this one too many times. So you need to take that. That's why I always try to push this. You know, I have this burning desire, and not everybody has it. You know, they don't see it. I didn't see it at one time. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, but you got to have that burning desire to understand, wow, this could be the start of the end. You know, it's just like, you know, when you get saved, you know, tomorrow or right now, in 5 minutes, Jesus can come back and it could be all over. How do you live your life? Well, if we were pursuing our spouses and pursuing conflict resolution in the same way, where will we be? So James, chapter 1, 23 through 25. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror, for he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he will be blessed in his doing. And in 1 John chapter 3, verse 18, little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth. So, you see the biblical principle here about the execution of it? It's very important, and the reasons why. Do you want to be that person who looks in the mirror and then walks away and forgets what he looks like? Or do you want to be blessed in your doing? And this blessed in your doing can be blessed in your marriage. Your marriage doesn't have to be a chore. It can be something really good. And when conflict comes up, you'll know how to handle it. Because let's face it, even if you divorce and marry again, the reason those statistics show it keeps going up is because it's not happening. The same result keeps happening over and over again. And now they're just tired of it, so they don't let it go on as long. Yeah. It's normally what happens. Yeah. So you need to find a plan, and you need to put that plan into place. And these four steps, I think, are a good plan. They're easy to remember. Don't defend, validate, plan, and then execute. It's four simple steps. When you're starting to get in your argument, I hope, or your conflict, that it comes up in your mind. And you're like, wow, what was those steps? Yeah, don't defend. All right, I got this. Validate. You know, and just hopefully it continues to build. I think if you put it into place, you start to see those results, you're going to get excited. It's not going to be easy the first few times, especially if you're having a lot of conflict. But as you start to get in the groove, it'll get easy. And you'll be able to continue to keep it moving. But the one thing I want to make sure that everybody, I know everybody's talked about it, but resolving conflict requires forgiveness. No matter how hard two people try to love and please each other, they will fail. When with failure comes hurt, right? The key to maintaining an open, intimate, and happy marriage is to ask for and grant forgiveness, and quickly. And the ability to do that is tied to each individual's relationship with God. About the process of forgiveness, Jesus said in Matthew 6, 14 through 15, "For if you forgive men for their transgressions, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men, then your Father will not forgive you your transgressions." And that's what it's all about, because I know we talked about forgiveness. It's not an easy thing. But I promise you, these four steps that are tied to these biblical principles, that if you put them into practice, these things can really change your marriage. It can change how you interact with conflict. See, when I grew up, I didn't know how to deal with conflict because no one dealt with it in my family, let alone communicate. And communication is a good tool, because if you communicate well, a lot of times you could probably eliminate a lot of the conflict because you got your thoughts across. But even though we all speak English, we're not all very good communicators. But when you get into these things, one thing I hope you walk away from here is the four steps. Don't defend, validate, plan, and execute. I know I haven't said them as many times in the Monty Python thing, but I like to repeat them a lot. And the reason is I'm hoping it's going to stick. You know, and the reason they, you know, you get spam in your email, that's because it came from Monty Python. Just think about that. That happened how long ago that skit was? And it's still a reference that's used today. And a lot of people don't even know where it came from, but the reference is still there. So I'm hoping that when you walk out of here, the one thing that sticks is you stick with those four things. And, you know, you have the Lord in your heart and stuff like that, and it'll fit in. So don't defend, validate, plan, execute. So those are the things that I have. So if you have any questions or anything for me, if not.
I think it was really good you talked about, again, emphasizing forgiveness and how important it is. Because no matter how much we try to not allow hurt to come into any of our conflict, we still do. And that's why it's so important.
Anybody else?
I like your comment about execute, because I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't really carry out, to me that reminds me just of obedience.
Yep.
If you don't carry out even good intentions or nothing without the follow through, it's there.
Absolutely.
You have to really follow through and walk into things the Lord's calling you to walk in.
Doers of the word, not doers.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Good job, John.